the MadTech Podcast Special, focusing on the most important topics in AdTech and MarTech. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's special edition of the MadTech Podcast, where we're going to be demystifying mobile in-app advertising. That's not a difficult task at all. But luckily, I have three fantastic guests joining me this week to help wade through this particular topic and get into some details. To kick off, we have Thomas Benius, who is Director for Mobile Publisher Development, EMEA, with PubMatic. Hello, Tom.
Hello, really glad to be here.
Thank you very much, Tom. You declared to me that you're just back from a lovely, relaxing holiday, so we're relying on you for some nice holiday vibes and some good mobile insight, because you weren't spending any time on your phone while you're on holiday, were you?
No, not at all. I wasn't playing any games or watching YouTube or anything like that.
And I'd also like to welcome Daniel Sitchell, who is Global Hub Lead at Zenith for TikTok. Hello, Daniel.
Hello. Thank you for having me on again.
Not at all. You're very welcome. And Happy New Year. We were just chatting about a fantastic Jewish holiday that's taking place today. Our third guest, I'd like to welcome Ali Kitab, who is Senior Programmatic Ops Manager at Upday, who are obviously an Axel Springer company. Hello, Ali.
Hello, Rachel. Thank you for having me.
Not at all. Pleasure. Great. So let's get started. Mobile in-app advertising, of course, since the start of the pandemic, there's been a lot of discussion about the opportunity for brands and advertisers in mobile as a channel, specifically in-app opportunities. There's been a lot of conversation associating gaming with in-app mobile advertising. But it feels to me that in the last 12 to 18 months, actually, the advertising opportunities across the mobile piece in general, and then specifically with in-app, have become really quite sophisticated. There's traditionally been quite an assumption, I guess, from a sort of brand marketer's point of view, that they can more or less adapt the same approach that works for them well in a desktop environment to a mobile environment. But we know that that's actually not, practically speaking, the case. So I wonder if you could give me a perspective on what you think, where you think that sort of approach potentially leads brands and advertisers, that perhaps causes them to think that mobile advertising is more of a challenge than it actually is, and perhaps speak about some of the expectations that have had to be readjusted when chatting with brands and advertisers who are used to advertising in the desktop environment and then wanting to look to maximize their opportunities in a mobile environment.
Okay, so that's a big one. Obviously, as publishers, we're looking at brands coming back into the in-app space from the old lens of what they're used to seeing from the desktop or more traditional. And we, as publishers, I believe we are very aware of that. We tried to walk them through step by step. I think even the platforms and publishers both realize that we, in the absence of brands, there's been a whole other ecosystem that's woken up from within the publisher ranks. And I'm referring to the hyper-casuals of the world. And of course, like you mentioned, TikTok, of course, being a publisher first and then becoming one of the biggest advertisers as well. So that void was sort of filled. These are fairly sophisticated buyers now because they come with the first party data and publisher background, so they know where their ROIs are. When we talk about brands specifically, it really depends on the brand we're speaking of. Some brands are very acutely aware that their audience is digital native and they go after them where they would be found, which would be apps where they're fully immersed. You mentioned gaming and engaged. For those of us who are not that young, have lost a few friends to the World of Warcraft here and there. And if you remember that experience, you just could not get through to these people once a raid had begun. And I find the new apps quite engaging in similar trend. But once you find someone who's addicted to the TikTok newsfeed, that algorithm is so brilliant in the content that it's serving out. It's really difficult to engage this user in a meaningful way in any other environment. So I would say that it is worth the additional effort in understanding the lay of the land in-app, but it's either that or you're not engaging with these users at all. And is that, and that again goes to the brands, is that a decision that they want to live with? They missed out the first mobile in-app go. Where are we going the next 10 years from now? It's definitely in that algorithmic, content-based, video-ish territory for everyone. So that's a discussion for them to have internally. Yeah,
that's a really interesting point, sort of reflecting on levels of engagement across audiences, right? Because it's probably safe to say that the way people engage with content and information in a desktop environment is quite different now to even what it was like, say, 10, 15 years ago. An interesting way to approach the notion of demystifying mobile app advertising is, rather than thinking of it from a channel point of view, think of it instead from a levels of engagement and how you would want to engage people point of view. Daniel, does that sound like, you know, does that sound like familiar territory to you with your work with TikTok and also just your vast experience from an agency buying point of view?
Yeah, I think you mentioned something that's really interesting, you know, the different ways that people are engaging in desktop versus mobile. I was actually having a conversation with someone the other day that was doing a study on how younger audiences are engaging with mobile content. And actually the biggest difference versus maybe traditional engagement with content is it's all the time. Right. When people are engaging with mobile content, it's all the time. It's not necessarily just particular times of day, which maybe traditionally desktop environments and even offline environments, newspapers, things like that. You know the time of day you're going to pick up the newspapers, probably during breakfast, or maybe when you've come home, you've fed the kids and you've got half an hour, you'll pick up the newspaper, you'll read it then. So you know that there are some clear moments. It's different in mobile. Mobile's always next to you. It's always in your hand. So advertisers who are looking to engage audiences need to think about it. Like, we need to be there all the time. We need to have a constant presence because we need to be capturing audiences whenever they want to come into that environment. And I do think that the amount of content and the variety of the breadth of content that's being ingested and viewed in mobile environments is different as well. People may be a bit more specific with the desktop environments they choose to go to. Whereas, again, in mobile, you know, you mentioned TikTok, the amount of the breadth of content that they're ingesting is huge. And so I think they do need to be considered differently. From my experience, traditionally I've worked with brands that have not been mobile first brands. And there is definitely an unawareness of the sorts of decision making that's happening within mobile environments, who's going into app environments, why they're going into that. That could be because ultimately the people that sign off media plans and campaigns may be slightly unfamiliar with could that be. Mindset. Could be, potentially. But again, that is changing. That will change with times, definitely. The younger the industry gets, et cetera, the more awareness they have, absolutely. And that will help it. But also people need to realize, and brands definitely need to realize, that it's still, from a brand advertising perspective, in-app is still quite early. So they have huge opportunity to invest now and actually have a big impact, great awareness for audiences that they may not be reaching otherwise.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is that audience behavior is changing, as well as the way that, I suppose, decision makers within the industry are viewing advertising and marketing opportunities. Tom, from your point of view, what types of conversations do you find that you're having with your clients and customers from the perspective of sort of enabling in-app advertising? Is it still very much as, Daniel's characterised, a case of trying to raise awareness of the value?
I think it really depends. I mean, I'd say over the past year or so, I think the availability of like quality ad impressions has massively increased. And to talk about consumption patterns changing, I mean, they have. More and more content is being consumed on mobile. And that, coupled with, I guess, the rise in header bidding for mobile, has led to increased scale for advertisers. So there is scale. But I'm going to caveat by that by saying that ad budgets simply aren't really following at the same pace. And I think there's a few reasons for this. Firstly, like, I still encounter like a lack of knowledge of how in-app works, how it's different. You know, Daniel just touched on some of those points, and how it can best be utilized outside of more of a DR, like gaming, UA, performance type space. And additionally, I'd argue that like mobile is often an afterthought for brands. It's often lumped in at the end of a campaign. If there's a spare 10K tied to a media plan. And mobile shouldn't be like that. Mobile has unique targeting capacities, and that should be utilized. I still think there's a lack of awareness of what today's in-app audiences look like and how really to access them programmatically. Again, still think there's a tendency to stick to old behaviors, to buy across perhaps indirect ad exchanges. So I still see blind buys from various ad networks. And these behaviors are going to change. And again, I just touched upon it, but mobile's data rich. Like, there's a vast amount of data that can be processed, whether that's location, lat long, to a varying degree, device ID. Of course, that's going away. Again, this isn't being utilized. We're just seeing, we're connected with various data partners, but they're not being utilized at exchange level. And then another point on that, I'm seeing a huge rise in sort of first party subscription based apps. So like apps that you have to log in, whether these are based around fitness, lifestyle, utility categorization, those type of sectors. Like utilize that data. Like you have to log in, like you can work with those partners directly and get that data. I think also, like, just to summarize this point in terms of demystification and separating out sort of desktop and mobile buys, still think that like people who are buying mobile inventory aren't fully aware that in-app mobile buying and standards have evolved. Like, 2021, we're seeing in a much safer place for advertisers to invest. That's because publisher verification technology is like massively moved along. Like, it's embedded into DSPs and SSPs now. And that coupled with sort of trickle-down methodologies from desktop, such as like app ad text and sellers.json. I mean, they're commonplace now.
Who is selling the idea that in-app is still a brand unsafe environment? Because I still hear it very frequently, and you're right.
Tell me, Daniel, tell me. Like, we're fighting a good fight here. Like, I think it's just people that have been burnt before, right? Like, people who have bought blindly, they're not sure what they're buying, but like that's not the case anymore. Like, you know, you don't have to do that.
Do you think that's... Oh, God.
No, I was just going to say, and that was going to be my question, is how are we tackling this sort of lack of awareness and lack of education, and how, I guess, further to Daniel's point, are we debunking some of these, for want of a better way to describe them, potentially myths? You know, mobile's had a bad reputation for things like brand safety and fraud for a long time, but things have moved in the industry from a technical point of view, and also just in the world of consumption of mobile content and in the sophistication of apps. So where's the disconnect, and how are we tackling that?
I think there has to be a desire. Definitely when you look on the buy side, there has to be a desire on the buy side to open up those connections to the selling side, you know, to the publisher side, to the SSPs of the world, to the publishers directly. I'm think that the sad truth is, having worked on the buy side for quite a few years, that the buy side is so embedded with the traditional connections they've got in desktop, in offline, commercially, all of those relationships are set up. And that actually interestingly works the other way as well. If you look on the publisher side too, the majority of the money that mobile apps and publishers are making from app first companies. When I remember having a conversation around potential trading deals that could, you know, favorable rates that could be opened up, and actually the budgets that are coming from the brand side from non-app based companies to the app publishers are nothing in comparison to the amount of budgets that people are willing to invest from the app side. So I think that there does need to be a willingness to be flexible and also to start speaking similar languages, because the publisher side is definitely talking the language they've been talking to mobile apps for many, many years. And that's a completely different language to the language that traditional brands, non-app brands, have been talking to publishers in the desktop and, the offline space for many years. So that's the gap.
There's definitely a gap. I'll just inject here from the data that we see as an in-app publisher. We noticed that there is always this expectation of the agencies coming in with a certain price point in mind when they think of in-app already, but they're not factoring into how it's going to perform, how it's going to engage, and what it might actually do to lift the brand. They come in with what they think is the range that seems fair. And for the first time over the past few years, especially since 2020, March 2020, you guys can guess what happened then. There was such a boost in the eCPMs we saw from the performance side of things, because for them, the performance buyers, oftentimes also app publishers, this is an existential question. Will we survive? Right. So they're going where they know where the performance is, and they're outbidding many of the traditional brands, which then spikes up the market, fills it up, and a publisher sitting there and thinking, well, I will take the higher eCPM, of course, and I will take, thank you very much, a performance buyer who's been buying for years on my inventory over taking the quick buck, even if it is a shiny brand. And I think that's what I was alluding to before, that this space has kind of compensated for itself. The economics of the in-app market has changed in the favor of the giant performance buyers, and brands are a nice to have, but we've moved away from that question of, do we need Coca-Cola to come in to save this industry? And I think we've all got the answer for that now, which is also a positive thing. But like Daniel said, maybe the brands and very much having qualified talent who understands the tech is a shortfall across it globally. We've had positions opened for remote for a lot of these technical positions, and they simply don't get filled. And you can imagine exacerbate that on the agency side with the over hours and all the other fun stuff that they have to do. It's not an easy task.
And there's a little bit of a global talent shortage across pretty much every industry at the moment. So where there was already an industry which might have been difficult to recruit to in the past, you're just adding more difficulties and complications to that, right? Back to you for a second, Tom, just on the sort of education and awareness piece. What kind of role do you see yourselves playing in that? I mean, obviously, as a technology supplier, no doubt you're in constant conversations with all of your clients and so forth about trying to bring them up to speed on some of the things that you mentioned, for example, industry standards, as well as, you know, not just the tools that you can offer them, but other things that you think can give them confidence to buy in this market.
One thing we're doing really well at the moment is continuing to educate and inform buyers. Well, not just buyers, also publishers with the type of deals that we're seeing coming through as well. Again, this is combating some of the previous negativity. We're really trying to help brands understand their audience. I guess really in order to make in-app advertising really worthwhile, it's important to understand how your audience sits within that landscape and what they're actually doing in an app. Like, every integration with an ad is very different. Like when I speak to a new buyer or even a publisher, well, actually specifically buyers, I always encourage them to, you know, put a site list and download some of those apps and really understand how the advertising is integrated into that app. Like 9 times out of 10, this experience offers a much richer experience than the user actually expected. So really to understand like how the ads are actually running in there. Like we've got to move away from this idea that mobile's just banners. That still does exist as well. To further understand really the value and return mobile can offer, brands, when they're planning, like putting together like a targeted PMP, they need to diversify the portfolio of apps that they advertise on. If you just take mobile gaming, mobile gaming is like 8 to 10 different categories. If you break that down by format, there's probably about the same number of ad formats within there. So it's really a case of like splitting out like what type of games you want to run on and what type of audience you need to you're looking for. So not just like really demanding that transparency on apps or URLs, but diversifying like the type of apps you're running on. That's so important as well.
Mm. And again, maybe there's just still a lack of or an underappreciation of the diversity available within in-app advertising, not just of audiences, but of also of content, right? And I guess that's what's driving the more diverse audiences. We sort of joked a little earlier characterizing that maybe buyers will better understand this as the buyers within brands and agencies become younger. But also those of us that, well, we're all getting older, but those of us that already started this conversation a bit older than others are also getting a bit more used to consuming content in a mobile environment, right? So when all of that becomes much more common and familiar and mainstream, then maybe you'll really start to see people understand the potential richness of advertising in the in-app environment, do you think?
Yeah, exactly that. Like you've got to get, as I said previously, you've got to get away from the idea that mobile or mobile devices just offer that standard 320 ad format. Like mobile devices in their very nature, like super tactile, In-app formats can be highly interactive, as we know. You can offer like the ability to like rotate product views. You can demo custom car models. You can even explore virtual environments. Like on our side, we've seen a huge growth in play formats. So like monetizing, you know, the mid distance and outside of a game. And also like there's notably been a lot of recent VC investment in like rewarded audio. Like, so as a media buyer, you've got to be like taking these things into consideration. You've got to be pushing the boundaries. You can't just settle for the status quo. And on some of those most immersive experiences are highly suited for brand awareness, like rather than performance. Like they're the perfect place to be running brand.
Absolutely. And also you raise a really good point, right, which is mobile devices are the way in which people are consuming audio content / radio content and TV content, particularly in some markets where that streamed TV content is almost exclusively consumed on a mobile device. And what necessarily follows that is the potential to have much more engaging formats for your advertising. I want to change tracks just for a second and go back to the data, the topic of data, right? So you mentioned, I think, Tom, the potential opportunities with logged in apps and the first party data that's available via those. So I suppose a bit more of a general question to all three of you, notwithstanding the challenges around mobile device identifiers, which we know are disappearing, what are the sort of data opportunities within a mobile environment, both for brands that are looking to target specific audiences or find new audiences, search out new audiences, but also for publishers that are wanting to, you know, attach value to their content? Ali, maybe let's start with you.
Sure. From our perspective, because of GDPR, at least in Europe, and there was a little bit of a scare when one of the big tech giants decided that they would maybe overbake the cookies in the oven too long and then they'll be all gone. Mm. Luckily, that didn't happen, but that did prompt a lot of publishers to take this as an opportunity to sit down and really look at that CMP, really get their data in order and clean up house a little bit, which has really benefited our own company for doing so. The first party data segments that we can now create and offer alongside third party data segments, for most advertisers, this was just something that was not available. Maybe there was an unwillingness to go there and invest in such infrastructure for most publishers, but now they see the worth of it, considering that third-party cookies might disappear or advertisers would only approach those with vetted data in order to pass on campaigns. So that was one aspect. Then that also opens another channel for publishers where they could work with DMPs and essentially sell off their data to those who are interested in targeting those, which also they deserve, right? Because they're collecting all of this, maintaining the CMPs, getting the consent from each user and taking the flak if anything goes wrong, also legal cover. So it's kind of given publishers also a flexible lifeline in order to do so. And we're still waiting for that component that the agencies really would love to be able to map it across all devices from desktop to mobile, but without having a common cookie. PubMatic and all the other SSPs and vendors are working hard to be the first in market to do so. We're all cheering them on.
Yeah, interesting. Thomas, a point of view on that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, when we speak to new publishers on a very top line, it's all about passing as much data possible to drive higher CPMs. And then just on the flip side of that, like every time I count a new brief or build a new package or build a new targeted PMP for an agency, it's really understanding what data they want to enrich the biz, whether that's data from us, like I think we work with like 50 to 60 data providers now, everything from sort of third party, first party, mobile specific, non-mobile specific, some connected TV providers as well. And then looking to enrich that across the campaign. It's really not for us, it's really for us to advise when setting up a campaign, but typically also advertisers have first party data that they would feed into a DSP at sort of buy level.
Is it possible that we could be, you know, billing mobile in-app advertising and as a kind of privacy compliant environment, particularly where people are logged in, right? So this is an alternative or it's a more sort of consumer first, perhaps focused advertising experience.
Absolutely. Buyers and brands are very concerned at the moment about making sure that their ads are want to be seen by the people that are actually viewing them. That is an absolute concern. What's interesting though is that brands traditionally have never bought data. You know, we very rarely work on the buy side with the CRMs of publishers we're working with. Maybe they'll send out an email, a Solus email, or they'll be on a newsletter, but most of the time it's a banner. It's a banner on their website. There's absolutely no data that's gone into that, very little utilization of the publisher's data. So actually there's quite an unawareness of how we should be working with publishers. You know, how we should be working with publishers who really understand who their audiences are, who've opted into them. And actually, maybe we should be speaking to those audiences slightly differently. We should adapt our campaigns depending on the publisher we're working with. So it does, for that to really work, it requires quite a shift in how buyers have traditionally been buying and creating campaigns. And where that shift needs to happen is more on having tailored campaigns depending on the publisher you're working with. You know, you can look at that depending on the data you're looking to engage with, the types of consumers, the messaging you're using within your campaign needs to be adapted depending on the publisher and again, their data. And also, you know, the imagery, everything needs to be adapted. And for some buyers, that may be too much, but really for this type of strategy to be successful, that's where the work needs to happen in tailored campaigns, depending on the publishers. But on the flip side of that, the publishing industry needs to get better at communicating where the vast amounts of that data sits. Like, who are the types of publishers that do have access to enough data for it to be worth the buyer's while to actually tailor campaigns to work with that particular publisher?
Can you see that happening, Ali?
Absolutely. I think that, like we often talk about the walled gardens of the big tech companies, what has also happened, transpired over the past 4 or 5 years is we've also created publisher gardens, if you will, of engagement. We're not the walled gardens that everyone wants to sue yet, but everyone wants to get there. And they've looked at that and try to follow, trying to get as much scale as possible. I mean, with Update being a news app, beginning pre-installed in all Samsung devices in Europe, this was the idea behind it. Let's get some scale of 25 million monthly active users, and that's when we can have the negotiating power to go for really selling data or getting into bigger deals where an agency, which is pretty much hierarchical, top-down, they want to do as little hands-on as possible, and that they're basically going to say, okay, I want to target males, and then you figure it out if you can add on the data for free, great. Otherwise, we'll use our own anyway. They're just going to compare to see. And that's also important from a publisher perspective to make sure that your data is good, right? You can't just say, we've got a truckload of data and there's no difference between untargeted and a targeted deal. So you have to really think of it from the publisher and the advertiser's perspective and see, what is this guy trying to do here? Try it out. Ideally with your own in-house brands, right? Try out a similar tactic within using your own inventory and just do that litmus test. And not a lot of publishers do that because they know what the answer is going to be. And so there has been a lack of sincerity in some cases where they're like, okay, let's just sell this and then cross our fingers and hope that they keep buying. We're getting far away from that now. And those deals just never get activated again. And I think there's a general understanding that if you are in the mobile in-app space, you have to be in it for the long haul. And we've seen so many SSPs and so many networks just disappear over the past few years, either through mergers and acquisitions, or they just, you know, you don't hear from them again. And I think that this has been, every publisher is quite aware of those actors and that attitude. And at least from the publisher side, I've seen a lot of work being done to try to be the ones who benefit from a GDPR and post-cookie world. And I think that would be the formula to go about doing that.
Yeah, that's really interesting because, you know, presumably what everyone's looking for in this environment at the moment is sustainable business models, right? So like you say, you're weakening your position if you're just going to hope for a sort of a scale with no quality strategy. And presumably that sort of suggestion, Daniel, that you've kind of vocalized a couple of times now, this idea that perhaps a closer understanding between buyers and sellers of what one another's facing, but maybe even a closer relationship in that advertising chain would be beneficial, right?
Absolutely. I mean, Tom touched on something that I've been a big advocate for in recent years, which is like PMPs. So, traditionally, maybe some people in the desktop spaces also do open network buyers. Open, they just buy programmatically. So, if someone could tell me my audience sits somewhere, great, I'll advertise to them wherever they are. But what the buyers are starting to realize, brands are starting to realize, is there's a real power in advertising to people in contextual environments, in environments which arguably could be on the customer journey. If they're not on the customer journey, they're in a related environment. So they're in that mindset. They're much more willing to engage with advertising when they're in the right mindset as well. You know, my background originally is affiliate marketing. It took the industry years to realize how powerful comparison websites were and how important they were for that advertising journey. So now we have to look at something similar for contextual relevancy. And when we look at PMPs of contextually relevant apps, and definitely in the last few years, as Tom said, you know, newer and more relevant categories have been showing up and really dominating the app space: lifestyle, fitness, recipes, food, etc. You know, so many different types of apps now that people can appear on. So I think when it comes to that closeness of a relationship, Tom mentioned, you know, he's building bespoke PMPs for advertisers. That's exactly what should be happening. It needs to be a much clearer view for advertisers of who and where that advertising is going to go. Because if you show an advertiser a screenshot of a really relevant environment for their advertising to be in, they'll bite your hand off. So yeah, we know it's very clear just from that screenshot and just from that background that our customers and our audience is going to be there. Desktop websites traditionally would do exactly the same thing. You just have a bunch of logos, a few examples of, you know, recognizable brands. They'd be like, yeah, I want to be there. Apps need to be doing the same thing. And I do think the future of that is in PMPs, especially for brand. It's going to be more challenging for performance brands to make that work because you're limiting the environments you can be in. But for brand advertisers, I think there's a massive opportunity when it comes to app PMPs.
Yeah, Daniel, just to build on that, like what I would love to get to or the end point would be to end specific channel buys, rather to think about the format and to think about the audience. So the format's video, it could be connected TV, like running across mobile, desktop, it doesn't really matter. It's looking at the audience and actually looking at the data. Like, that would be my holy grail in curating like a targeted PMP for a brand. Just to say, like, here, run on this. Trust me, we're not there yet, but that's what I'd love to do.
Why is the industry a bit not there yet?
Very good question.
Yeah,
go, Ali. Ali's got the answer.
If I may, how can you talk about PMPs and not listen to the publisher? I will tell you what this is. No, so from our perspective, it's quite clear. The advertisers on the brand side need to partner with sophisticated buying technology, not average. You need the best. I'll give you an example of what we did was we figured that there's an advertiser coming in into the open auction frequent enough. Okay. So we figured out where the agency is and yada, yada. And we approached them and said, we see you doing a lot of buys in the open auction. They're like, oh yeah, it's part of the run and publisher site, blah, blah. Great. So what we're going to do is we're going to set up a first look deal for you. And we're going to set up a deal where you're in comparison with other buyers similar to you. So there's going to be three levels in which you access this inventory. The rest we're going to leave up to your algorithm. And we're going to tell you the prices up front. This is the floor here, here, here. Why are we putting these different prices? That's a higher look than this one. This is a higher look than this one. And you get to pick and choose. Let your algorithm go crazy. The ones with sophisticated algorithms, they 6x their spend immediately. It was simply them coming into the open auction, discovering this user is, are they engaging? Are they interested? Oh, okay. They're moving down the funnel now. Okay. Now we're going to go after them a little harder. And then finally, we're going to close them with the first look. And overall, the ROI tracked super positive. So they continue to spend. If you don't have the right buying partner with you who can actually access these three different levels of the publisher's inventory, then you're kind of just doing one third of the job. And I think that's a big part of this buying piece that most brands miss out because, like Daniel mentioned, they have more traditional relationships and maybe not everyone's gone there, especially having three types of integrations for PMPs for in-app. Yeah, forget about it. You know, so that's part of the problem, but that's also the solution.
So, you know, Where does a brand go to get the right kind of advice and support to navigate their way through this then, right?
So we've had some great experience with PubMatic. In the last couple of years, we've done exactly what I'm talking about now and tried to close that relationship. We've had a great experience with DSPs like The Trade Desk, who have really gone above and beyond. I think the challenge that Ali's sort of pointed out, that it does need to be absolute assistance with the buying teams, because our buying teams are traditional buying teams, right? They won't have worked in this space before, so they need that help. And even when they're working on self-serve DSPs, the DSPs still need to make sure they're giving that service, because if they're not giving that service, that educational service, if they're not working really hard to understand the buy side as well, then the teams that are buying through their platform won't understand it. And they'll maybe run one campaign, but they'll never come back, because they never really understand like what's actually happening behind the scenes. And that's the key thing. So it does need to be at every single level. You know, we need to have the relationships with the SSPs. The SSPs need to be coming in to be talking to the agency buying teams. The DSPs need to be talking to the agency buying teams and have that ongoing account management relationship. And that's where I think it's those three levels for me. That's how I would consider it.
Yeah, just to build on that, I think also collaboration on our side, like we're a publisher-led exchange. So bringing sort of publishers to the fore, bring them out on the road with us. Again, I talked about it previously, bringing publishers out on education sessions to agencies has really helped open up doors and revenue as well, really narrowing that gap between buy-side exchange and publisher. Like that, just when people actually see the human side of a publisher, they're more likely to buy as well. It's a bit old school, but it still works.
There's something kind of satisfyingly old school about it though, right? It's this idea that actually there are human beings behind all the technology and the transactions, and there is some value in personal relationships, right? We started off in the conversation obviously talking about demystifying mobile advertising, but also in the opener, a bit of a nod to what the opportunities are for in-app advertising. And we've talked about that very much in a general capacity, but I think it wouldn't be right if we didn't pause for a second and say a little bit more about the world of, I'm going to say mobile gaming, but I'm also going to say utility or super utility app advertising and opportunities. I'm mentioning both of those things because obviously mobile gaming has just been huge business for quite some time, but frankly has garnered an awful lot of attention in our industry over the last 18 months. So let's talk a little bit about the opportunity in mobile gaming, perhaps where some of the challenges are and what we need to do to tackle those. And then the reason I wanted to mention utility apps and super utility apps is because I'm really acutely aware of the fact that those are extraordinarily popular apps in a lot of countries, including European countries, but have really driven that mobile in-app advertising marketplace in APAC. And so I'm interested in your perspectives on that, both from a buy and sell side.
The best thing that's happened is e-gaming, is esports, because esports, what the esports has done is it's brought gaming in general onto the bigger stage and onto the average person's conversation. So it's no longer an age thing. It's no longer this perception that gaming is only being played by young people, and it was always mothers. I was always told the only people that played games were young people and mums. And now that's changed, that perception. So esports has done an amazing job in the last couple of years of shifting that perception, because everyone is playing esports. Everyone's sort of into esports. Everyone may play FIFA, etc. So I think that what we're starting to see is a lot more inventory and opportunities in games, not just in apps, but in actual games. So, we're working with lots of partners where you can start advertising on billboards in GTA. And on the sideboards of football matches and stadiums and FIFA. So those opportunities come along, and brands are like, this is great, this is good, this is innovative, which is ironic because these innovative formats have been in mobile games for quite a while.
A long time.
Yeah, maybe it's been packaged slightly differently, right? The conversation's been had in a language that was slightly more familiar to traditional brands, and that has made the big difference. So I think we'll start to see brands just become a lot more open to innovative formats. And it comes down to the language that these opportunities are being put across. And mobile gaming holds exactly the same opportunity as some of the esports gaming opportunities that are coming along. And it just needs to be packaged in a way that the brands and traditional brands can be familiar with, think is exciting, and, you know, they want to be there.
And can understand. That totally makes sense. Yeah. Ali, what's your perspective on the mobile in-app gaming industry?
I will talk about esports, but I can't talk about esports without mentioning that we believe so much in esports that we actually launched an app to cover esports news. It's called Jackson. Anyone can go and download it, be happy. My PO would have killed me if I didn't mention that. So there's definitely this opportunity that's always been because of esports and more so even because of Twitch, even if we don't go into the esports route, that has just opened the eyes of traditional advertisers saying, there's more people who watch this League of Legends thing than the Super Bowl. That's just two worlds colliding. And then at the end of the day, try reconciling that, okay, a user is a user. And as long as their money's good, we can sell them something, right? So let's change that view. These young adults who will be tomorrow's leaders are going to be our customers at some point, or should be our customers. And should we have that conversation sooner rather than later? And as I alluded to in the beginning, with the TikTok generation and children growing up around this technology, they're going to just be able to engage with these brands much sooner. And so you are more likely to have those conversations sooner with them in esports, in game, in audio, in the more innovative spaces. So they're familiar with you, and it's not like they're not apps and companies already doing it. So if you don't catch up, they will have brand loyalty and affinity to brands. They're just not going to be your brands. And none of us knew TikTok musically a few years ago. It is considered a huge brand globally now. And how quickly did that happen, right? So we're going to see winners and losers again in this space. And for sure, esports and gaming and, Rachel, you mentioned utility apps, they threatened to be the Facebook quote unquote of the future for everything. And we know countries where this is already the case, right? So the Western version of WhatsApp would be doing everything in China, and so on and so forth. So we're going to definitely go into a territory where people trust a brand to the extent that they want them to get their laundry done, get the cars, and get them the best internet package they can find. And at that point, you're locked out because there's already someone dominating that space. So this is more a strategic view that it's kind of it takes me back to as being a publisher on newspapers and of how during the pandemic, a lot of traditional newspapers within our own group were very complacent, sitting on the laurels, and then a catalytic event comes and just shakes up something that was already trending in that direction. Digital news exploded. We're a news aggregation app telling everyone that so many people passed on because of this viral disease. You would have thought we would have no advertising business. We've made the best numbers in the past 2 years than we've ever seen. So let's not wait for that black swan event to kind of come and kickstart things. The data is already pointing towards the importance of in-app data and younger digitally native users coming on. And I think that the more in-tune brands have already started pushing their agencies and saying 50% is going towards mobile, and that's how it's going to be. And then they're figuring out how to actually try to get those old engagements. But I think a lot of brands already see it coming. So that's the positive of it.
Super fascinating, right? It's just reminding me very briefly of sort of a conversation slightly connected to this that we had on the MadTech podcast last week, where we were talking about advertising and marketing opportunities in the metaverse, you know, and it strikes me that certainly the gaming world is going to be, you know, an environment where people can probably understand what those, what a metaverse might look like, what interacting in that environment might look like, and potentially what the advertising and marketing opportunities are like there. Tom, what's your perspective on sort of in-app advertising from a gaming point of view? Perhaps even just a word on some of the technical challenges that you see coming forward. I know earlier on, you mentioned that your ambition would be to try to get brands to think about their advertising capacity across channels rather than within channel. Any perspective on the world of gaming in-app advertising?
Yeah, I mean, the best place to start, I mean, like, looking at some of the numbers still, it's truly staggering. So, I mean, if you look at Candy Crush, for example, they still have just under 300 million daily active users. And newer apps like Roblox, obviously recently IPO'd, they've just got under 50 million daily active users. It's absolutely massive, the opportunity. It's probably too big for a lot of brands to actually fully comprehend. From an advertiser perspective, I'd argue that like mobile app is 100% brand safe or 90% brand safe or near enough 100%. And that's because there's not any user-generated content. If you carefully genre select and choose the type of games or the channel, whether it's like hyper-casual, mid-core, casual, and set up necessary allow lists, you can really run like a brand safe campaign. Also, it's highly engaging as well for advertisers. So there's some recent research by Tapjoy that revealed that 64% of consumers were more likely to engage within an in-app rewarded video unit versus a social media sponsored post. And then going on from that, Tapjoy found that these consumers were more likely to go down the funnel and actually make a purchase. Measurement and ROI. If you're going to set up post-plat tracking, even pixel tracking, you can garner a huge amount of data. You can optimize campaigns pretty much in real time. All that can all be measured back and attributed to original media source and click. From a developer's perspective, it's pretty straightforward. Like running ads increases revenue. There's higher likelihood of increasing app purchases because you're offering people additional coins, you're keeping them in the sort of cycle and the loop of the game. And therefore you're boosting engagement and retention. As Daniel said, more and more publishers that we're seeing are starting to test out new formats. And that's really interesting. So one of the challenges actually would be, what I'm seeing is taking out what is sort of commonplace on the publisher side. So taking out the fact that, audio ads, sort of rewarded video audio ads are being tested. And taking that story out to the brand side and getting that and selling that in, that's really challenging. I'm finding that really challenging at this stage. Hopefully we can push that. And I think dealing with brands specifically that are mobile first and engineered towards younger audiences would help. But definitely with traditional brands, that's been a challenge so far for us at PubMatic. Taking out the new formats for mobile, which of course moves at a rate of knots. It's constantly evolving. So taking out that story and selling it in on the other side is a challenge.
Just one thing on that. I've never been a fan of the term rewarded video because it, for majority of the industry, it always harkens back to incentivized video and people don't like the word incentivized. If you're talking to a buyer, a normal buyer, just call it video. Whether or not someone may be rewarded after watching it doesn't really matter. They've watched the video. For me, it's just video, and actually brands would consider it just video advertising as well. I've worked with a fantastic brand in the past called Good Loop. Good Loop, they do amazing things in the industry. So they reward users for watching the video by donating some of the advertising money to a charity, and the consumer can choose the charity that I donate some of that money to. They just call it video. It's just a video unit they sell. They don't come to buyers with rewarded video. They come with video that has this additional benefit of allowing a buyer to donate money to charity, and people buy it and it works. It's a nice thing. So yeah, I think partly it's repackaging some of the things that's being offered and put in front of the buyers so that they stop thinking of it as incentivized. They stop thinking of it as non-brand safe, because Tom, I absolutely agree with you. When we talk about viewability, for example, and we're looking at interstitial formats, how can anyone argue that there's any viewability questions in app compared to what you've got in desktop environments where we're still desperately trying to justify 70% viewable, which means 30% of people that are not seeing your ads. So you're still paying for that 30%, but that's fine. That's the standard. And I think we need to start changing the perception of what the standards of the mobile industry is, and compare it to the standards of the desktop industry. And I think people will realize actually that we need to be investing more in mobile.
And I think that's actually a really good point, because you've mentioned it a couple of times now, this notion of sort of repackaging things. Actually, sometimes it's about the language that we're using, right? Is that how do things become commonly understood, or in this case, misunderstood, because we repeat the same language over and over and over again. And maybe it's a case of refreshing the terminology that we're using, as well as, because as you, you know, and Tom, you said it earlier on as well, you know, there are a much wider range of formats in a mobile environment. So along with that much wider range, let's refresh the way that we describe it altogether. And because I was going to ask you, Tom, you know, what are the challenges that you're coming up against when you're trying to speak to brands about, you know, about the value in this particular part of mobile advertising? And maybe it's as Daniel suggests, that they sort of start to shut down when they hear some of the familiar terminology. The other thing I was just going to say about what you just said there, Daniel, is I think that's a really practically kind of helpful perspective, is if you want brands to be taking the mobile advertising opportunities as seriously as they would desktop, then we should be adhering to the same standards and the same, you know, the same professionalization, I suppose, of that part of the industry. And maybe that's part of the issue.
Absolutely. Yep. Benchmarking themselves, and mobile smashes desktop, engagement rates, viewability rates. I mean, the list really does go on. Mobile is better when it comes to a lot of the metrics that we would put against and measuring most of our digital campaigns.
And that's also notwithstanding that, you know, there are huge challenges coming down the line for measurement across lots of forms, formats for digital advertising. But then we're therefore seeing some potential opportunities for mobile environments. We've already discussed the opportunities for advertisers in environments that are logged in or using first-party data, but also that they are conduits to other environments which don't rely on third-party cookies, such as audio advertising, such as connected TV. So, yeah, there's just sort of plenty of opportunity there. We're just about running out of time, but just as a summary, I'd like to hear from each of you on, I guess, what your hopes are for mobile advertising, specifically in-app advertising, over the next 12 months. I mean, there's much to talk about, but maybe a couple of points from each of you of what you'd like to see happen in the industry over the next 12 months, whether that's a challenge you want to see dealt with or handled, or whether that's a particular trend you want to forecast. Tom, let's start with you.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, we've already seen it on iOS, of course, over the last year, but one trend that's up and coming has already begun is the deprecation of the GAID, so the Google advertiser. And that's already been deprecated across opted out users. So, whatever that challenge brings, there'll be an opportunity on the site. It could be that, you know, performance campaign CPAs increase, CPMs increase. But there's always opportunity on the other end of that. So we're preparing for that at this stage. We did see a shift by as much as, I think, 17% of in the US of iOS spend coming over to Android when the IDFA was announced that it was going to be deprecated with iOS 14. So, yeah, always opportunity. As I said previously, it moves pretty quickly. You know, this isn't all doom and gloom. Like, spend is increasing, you know, at PubMatic. 30% of our spend comes from app now, and that's up, you know, 100% over 2 years. So I want to see that increase. Obviously, I want to see it increase quicker, and I'm going to continue doing that. And the team here are going to continue doing that by, you know, spending time educating, taking, you know, more and more publishers out to market, and yeah, keep fighting the good fight, basically.
Ali?
Yeah, I would just say, to summarize, on the positive side, I do see even the big tech shaking hands and getting closer and trying to make sure that all audiences are addressable. This is not something that was a given a few years ago. I think that they all see that they're all kind of similar in many ways, and they're working out the kinks to make sure that all traditional and performance advertisers are able to target basically globally everyone. And I think in terms of reach, we've never been able to reach more users than we are able to today. So that's super great. In terms of semantics in ad tech and calling an apple, that's not always a given. We would all do much better to educate each other on how our funnels look like, what our KPIs look like, and what do we mean when we say Apple. right? So that, I think, just in communication, professional to professional, sets the benchmark for a lot more scalable businesses. I think that sometimes a lot of the deals that don't fall or fall through the cracks, rather, are based on, I thought they meant this and they thought that you meant this, and then that one campaign never comes back. So if we're more deliberate and explain more clearly what this targeting does or what this data point does across the industry, and less in terms that we hope they don't understand and they just say yes, I think that we will continue to go around this circle. And I think brands that understand this make sure that their teams understand it. And it's the same on the publisher side to try to make sure that there's a long-term business here. I can only hope that that continues to happen.
Yeah. I mean, I once heard Danny Spears, who now works for the Ozone Project, used to work for The Guardian here in the UK, sort of characterized part of the ad tech industry as opaque by design.
Absolutely. It's intimidating and no one likes to admit that they're wrong. No one likes to say they don't know, but we have to go through this. It's super important that we do. And I believe it's people are more open about doing it now than they were.
100%. Daniel.
I think your last point, Rachel, was excellent. It was going to be one of mine. A simplification of the buying process would be something I'd hope for in the next 12 months. Just a simpler way of explaining it, packaging it, putting it forward would be excellent. And also, I think we touched upon it, and the more I've thought about it, the more I've realized that actually partly it's brand safety partners, technologies that need to do a better job explaining to buyers how their technology works in app. And I've had multiple conversations with said technology brands that just are not that familiar with the specifics. And actually because of their unfamiliarness they have to how it works. Unfamiliarity to how it works, to some of the complexities, they make it seem really complicated and that it doesn't work properly and that it's a black box and that actually you do need to be a bit more nervous of it than you need to be on desktop. And it's just not true. And if they were better at convincing buyers that their technology works, it's in place, they're integrated with the DSPs, they're integrated with the SSPs, they've got their technology in place and it works, we would be in a much better place. And I think finally on that, what I'd hope brands start to realize is that for some apps, there will still be user-generated content, absolutely. And there may still be brand-safe content. You do absolutely need technologies to help you ensure you don't appear in front of if that's your priority for you. But the vast majority of available inventory across apps does not have user-generated content you need to be concerned about. And when we're so concerned about brand safety at the moment and not appearing next to X and Y, in-app does present this opportunity, like more so than some social platforms may do, where you have no control over what you may be shown in front of. In-app is great. You can select the environment. You know, it's a fixed environment. They're only going to show food recipes on there. They're only going to show different ways you have to do your daily workout. What's more brand safe than that? So, yeah, I think that for me is what I hope to see in the next 12 months.
Thank you very much. We've run out of time. Thank you, gentlemen. Tom, Ali, Daniel, that was really a great conversation. I'm not sure we solved all the issues of the world of mobile advertising, but then if we'd managed that in 45 minutes, we might be ruling the world. So that's an ambition for another podcast. Thank you very much for joining me, gentlemen.
Thank you. Thank you, Rachel.
And thanks, everyone, for listening. That was this week's Mad Tech Podcast.